This is the Chasing Tomorrow podcast with Joe Gagnon. We bring you captivating conversations that will inspire all of us to go after our own version of a high-performance life.
Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. We have a very exciting guest. In all of my years of sort of being a fan person of adventure, from the youngest days, I saw people who wanted to climb Mount Everest, and I found out about these 8,000-meter peaks, and I've been reading about adventure and mountaineering forever. Did a little bit of myself throughout my life. Have not made it up much past 15,000 feet, but there is this sort of the top of the world kind of feeling. And my guest today is an adventurer, mountaineer, just sort of probably just an inspired person who found their path there. Tomorrow Lunger is with me. And we're going to talk a little bit about not just the excitement of getting to the top, but some of the other challenges that happen along the way, recovery means, and then what goals mean. So anyway, Tamara, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being on.
Hello. Nice to meet you online.
Yes, exactly. Well, the place I always like to start is, I think this way, Tamara, it's easy when we look back on our lives to tell a story, right? Because it's so easy. Oh, I did this and this, and I had these intentions. And sometimes really it wasn't that clear. But I think there was some clarity that formed early in your life about this life of adventure. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up, how you found this sort of inspiration about adventure, and where that started to take you.
Yeah, I grew up here where I still live in South Tyrol in a very small village of 500 souls. And we were all the time outside, so the nature was our playground every day. And then my father, he did mountain bike races. So I think he was the first person of this village who had a mountain bike.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, he raced for years. And of course, we have been the loudest fan club.
I love that.
And we went there to the races every weekend. And some Saturdays, we also didn't go to school because we needed to go to the races. So for me, this was all a very nice childhood, and to be around there with the sportive people and these values and the friendship which grew there. And it was also special to me that already in these young years I decided I want to become a sportswoman. Also the guys who drove along with this sponsored cars, and I said, oh, one day I will have a sponsored car. And yeah, it was so nice for me. So for me it was clear the future is something in the sports world. And then we had a VB, like a minibus. Our father always slept in the hotel, but my mom and my two sisters, we always slept in this van.
Oh, wow.
And this was the best for me. In the morning, waking up and having breakfast there, for me was the most beautiful thing. This simplicity. And yeah, let's say after, of course, I went to school. My high school was a gymnasium with sport. And after I started sports science and everything just with sport. Yeah, so this was my way.
And yeah, that's, well, many of us don't find our way till much later on. How did you feel in your sort of friend group in the beginning? Were they loving this idea of adventure, or did you feel like you were an outsider with that feeling?
Yeah, I felt often an outsider because I was very focused. Like I had my ideas, very clear ideas, and I wanted to do this. And I was often alone and I trained alone. Also, when I went to university, I was not a typical student. I was just heading from one training hour to the next one. And so it was not that I went out in the evenings or so on and I was drunk or no. For me, it was everything just sport. I think I was also a little bit dependent, maybe a little bit more than just a little bit. Yeah.
And so that it's always interesting because to pursue the kind of goals you ended up pursuing, in some way you have to separate from other people who don't have those goals, right? Because it's not complimentary. You have to put so much effort into getting prepared to do the kinds of activities you were going to do. How did you feel about sort of, was it okay be different than everyone else for you? And was it that you had such a connection with nature and the outdoors that that was the replacement for you?
Yeah, for me it was quite okay. But I just realized in my last year, 3 years, that sometimes it was just too much focus, too much just training, nothing more, and mountain. And it was just, I thought that this was 100% of passion, but I realized now the last years that it was maybe just because I gave value to me only because of the sportswoman, of the athlete, and not because I'm a human. And this was sometimes very hard also because I was dependent on this being an athlete and making performance. And whenever, because I had so much pain since I was 13 years old, always my knees. So my body talked to me constantly and I never wanted to listen. I was kind of in a war with myself, with my body, because I had a very strong mind, but in my opinion, my body was just weak for the plans I had. And so I was fighting against my body all the time and my knees were hurting 90% of my life. And then, of course, I had several periods where I went to the doctor, physiotherapist, and they said, now you need to stop. You need to stop because this is just too much. You're not doing anything good to you and to your body. So, and in these periods, I was depressed and life had no more sense to me. So for my parents was also quite tricky. And yeah, it was not an easy life, I would say. It was always just fighting. I wanted to go with my head against the wall. I wanted to smash everything. And I was also kind of not aggressive, but always a little bit stressed all the time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because you think about what we do through our teenage and our early formative years is to try to define who we are. You had sort of outlined a vision of what you wanted to be. And you were certain you were going to get there regardless of whatever the obstacle was, because that was important, right? You wanted to be that person that you were creating. Yeah. And so your willingness to work through the pain. Mm-hmm. As you went through that, what reinforcement were you getting outside of just what you wanted? Were you starting to succeed in the mountains, or did you start to get the attention that was helping to reinforce what you were doing?
Yes, when I started going to the mountains, I had a lot of people who were just like happy for me that I'm able to do this and that I have the courage to do it. And some of the persons, of course, they were afraid that something happened to me. And also my parents, they always said, you should take care a little bit more of you.
Right.
But when I started to go to the mountains, they had 100% of faith, because before I did ski touring races, I wasn't in the national team. And of course, I was trained very well, but I was never really doing a lot of real mountains. I was more into the races. But for me, it was clear since I was 14, 15 that I would go one day to the 8,000ers. For me, this was the big goal. And then I had the opportunity to go with Simone Moro. And of course, he had a lot of experience. And my parents were just happy that I had this opportunity to go with him and not to be with somebody else.
Yeah. Let's talk about this 8,000 meter peak kind of desire that you had. So maybe for the listeners, you could tell people what the significance. There's not that many peaks that are over 8,000 meters in the world, right? And for the Americans, this is sort of over 25,000 feet of elevation. Of course, Everest being the tallest of the, but not the hardest, the 8,000 meter peaks. What was it? Did you have this Mount Everest fascination, or it was just generally the truest, highest mountains in the world?
Yeah, it was not Mount Everest. It was just like, I read an article about a woman, an Italian woman who climbed Mount Everest. And this was with the age of 14, 15. And in this moment, I felt that something in me was moving. And I knew in this moment, I will do this one day. Because for me, I thought this would be the king discipline of mountaineering. So it's not enough just to be trained. You need to have a lot of other skills, a lot of luck, and the mental strength, and to be balanced in everything, the partner, the team, the gear. There are a lot of things which need to match to be successful.
Yeah. And of course, in your instance, you found someone who had experience who you could then learn from, because this isn't, you're not going to just put on a backpack and try and climb up one of these mountains.
Exactly. And the funny thing was that I just felt since the first step on the Khumbu Icefall, because my first 8000 was Lhotse, I was just happy. I was like in love. There was nothing too cold, too hard, too whatever. It was just, I'm in my dream, actually. It was the best thing of my life.
Yeah, that's an interesting feeling that this thing you so many years now is satisfied by starting there. But then it's one thing to get to a base camp, right? Which,
yeah,
for listening, is it where you establish your starting point really in one of these 8,000 meter peaks, and then you have to work your way little by little to the top. Now, I believe correctly that you decided you were going to make this even harder, right, than just the normal hike up the climb up the mountain. What was it that you decided you were going to do to make it even harder?
Yeah, when I did Lhotse, of course, it was my first experience, and I was not directly with Simone. I was with him in the base camp, and then I was on the mountain. He went to Everest. I went on Lhotse, and yeah, it was a little bit a crazy situation, because he had a client. This client wanted to go to Everest, and after he wanted to do the traverse of Everest Lhotse with Denko, he was also there with us. They had two or three Sherpas for this client, and then the client got sick. So I did my acclimatization on the mountain while they went towards Everest. Sometimes we went together, sometimes I went with other people. And due to the camps, the lower camps up to camp 3 are the same, so there was no problem with the tents and so on. And after this client got sick, he went home, and I tried to go to the top of Lhotse with one of the Sherpas, but then the Sherpa got sick, so we went down again. And then I went with another one, and the last meter, so already above 8000, I was so cold that I didn't know what to do. It was so cold. What should I do? I don't want to lose my toes. And where is the limit? This was all new. So I decided to take oxygen. But then when I went down to base camp, I was so, so disappointed, because I said, you never wanted to use oxygen. And also because then the last meters, I didn't use oxygen anymore because I was quite warm. The sun was out, and so it was, of course, much nicer. And I was so disappointed, but I needed this experience to understand what is my style. So I said, I don't want to go with Sherpa. I don't want to go with oxygen. And from there, I used to go like this until K2 in 2004. And then I had the possibility to go into winter. And this was then for me like a very big step.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the cold, but for me it was more to escape the crowd.
Okay.
So to be responsible for every step, every action, every decision you take. Okay. And
just as a reference here, when you say go do a winter 8,000 meter peak, very few people do that. That's, you know, so it's select to do any 8,000 meter peak. It's even more selective to do in winter because, well, of course, the weather is that much harder, and it's going to be that much colder.
The temperature, right. It's like double hard.
Yeah.
You're completely alone on the mountain. So we have been alone for years in these 8,000 meter peaks in winter. And it was just amazing to me because this was the real mountain, the real pure lonely mountain. And it was all for us, and it was just so magic, and I felt this connection, and yeah, for me was, I think the mountain was the biggest teacher of my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then winter and no oxygen made it harder and harder. And you said you don't like the cold. And so people listening are like, well, what's the matter with the poor person here who isn't okay with, but do these adventures, right? There's a recognition that one way for us to embrace life, right, which is through the difficulty. And sometimes we need the difficulty. In some way, it's managed, right, what the difficulty is, and you're working through it.
Yeah, and I also discovered that if you have such a big passion and love for something, there is nothing which can take away this from you. So even the cold, even the danger or the or the difficulties. It's just you have a different limit because, for example, when we went through the ice falls in the two of us with very hard conditions and so a lot of crevasses and dangerous and difficult, but for us was like, I felt that two kids are playing around. For us was pure joy, and we nearly we were nearly fighting who was the person who goes in front. Everybody wanted to be in front.
That's great.
To make adventure, to do exploration.
But we talk about, everyone talks about mindset now and the power of the mind and what we can, how we frame it, right, is how we feel. And even if we're uncomfortable, but if we frame it like you did, which is this is a joy, this is fun, this is what comes with it, right? That I'm going to be cold or uncomfortable, but that's okay because you feel the joy on the other side.
Yeah.
Have you gotten better at that reframing as you got more experience with it so that it got even more fun over time?
No, it was more or less always the same because I felt always like this little kid who just wanted to explore.
That's amazing. And so when you get to this 8,000 meter peak world, and we all know this, right, that it is great if we get to the top, but it's actually better to be alive and to get down and not to just end our lives there, because that can happen, of course. But so you've had, and K2 is, if not the most difficult, one of the two most difficult of the climbs, right, of the 8,000 meter peaks. So tell me a little bit about what was it like to get up to the top of K2? How did that go for you?
Yeah, for me it was a gift because some people try 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And for me it was working at the first attempt. I was here with a South Tyrolean friend and just the two of us without oxygen, without porters. And it was just amazing, amazing and amazing. I felt like in the base camp when we, after all the acclimatization and we just waited the good weather window for the summit push, I was in my tent in the evening before sleeping. I was counting the days. Okay, two more nights and then I can go to the top. For me, it was like a kid who is waiting Christmas.
Right.
And so the further I went up towards the summit, the more fulfilled I felt, because it was, of course, then up to Camp 3, I knew already everything, or the uphill. But then was every step something new, a new discovery. And then when you see this Serac in front of you, it's so huge and so beautiful. And it's just, I think I cannot really describe it.
No, it's like divine. It's the same idea of a religious feeling and transcendence. Yeah. They only have.
And there was not even a moment of doubt. Since I saw the mountain from Concordia already before base camp, I watched the mountain and I felt the butterflies in my stomach. And I knew in this moment I will go to the top. And so I had not even one moment of how to say,
doubt at all.
Yeah, doubt. So I was just happy to do every step.
And then so you get these successes. And of course, there are some struggles. One, you didn't make it to the top, or there's other issues along the way that, well, you can have an accident, or we've always heard a lot of this stuff. What were some of the, well, you've made some good decisions because you've found your way back down every time, clearly. But what were some of the harder struggles that you found? Because that day, K2, right, you were there, you were on it, it was going to happen, you knew that. But it didn't always work that way, right? What are some of the struggles that you've encountered as you try to take some more, because you have confidence, but maybe not certainty?
Yeah, of course, it was my first experience was then in 2006, Nanga Parbat in winter. So we wanted to do the first winter ascent. And also there, for 30 years, the best high altitude mountaineers tried this mountain in winter and nobody was able. So for me, it was not even, I didn't even thought about this. I was just following my heart. And when Simone said, we could try Nanga Parbat in winter, I was, yes, we will do this. And again, there was no doubt. And of course, there have been some struggles in the base camp with also, because there have been then more teams trying the summit. And at the end, just four of us stood in the base camp. And then we tried the four of us. Also there, it was magic. But then the summit push was a very new experience to me because I understood that my closest climbing partner is God. So even though my friends were maybe 20 meters, 30 meters apart, but I knew that if now something happens, I'm completely alone. I cannot count on them because they have their own struggle and their own difficulties, and it's winter. So it was, they said, a wind chill of minus 58 this day up there. So every wrong step or every wrong behavior, you pay with maybe also your life.
Right.
And that's why for me was, I was praying all the way up until 70 meters below the summit. And this day was so hard for me. And I was just thinking about ski mountaineering races. And today I need to give all in. And I was pushing hard because this was my biggest dream, to become this first woman ever to make a first winter ascent. And so the goal was very, very big, but I understood clearly that when this phrase came in my mind, so if you go to the top now, you will never see your family again. And this was so powerful that I knew what I have to do. Mm-hmm. I needed to go down. And then I also had a fall while going down. I was alone. I had this fall and I thought, okay, game over. Now 3,000 vertical meter are waiting for me. And I hope that when I smash at the bottom, it will not hurt too much. So this was my thought. And I really thought it's the end of my life. But I was happy because I said, thanks God, until today, I did everything I really wanted to. I clearly remembered that I thought this while falling down.
Wow.
Yeah.
So first you make a really good decision to turn around. Yeah. It turned out to be almost tragic in the same way that not turning around could have been tragic.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have an accident. And now sort of what happens then? So you sort of reconcile your life in a sense in this moment, but then you have a reality that actually that didn't happen.
Yeah. Then all in a sudden I fell in a soft snow, and the mountain was all really hard because of the wind and the cold. So for me it was like a miracle. And there was the sunset, and I felt this is only for me. This sunset is only for me. But now I need to be fast to go back up to the tent because I fell lower down. And there was already the sunset. I had my headlamp, but I knew here are some crevasses. So for me, it was like a race against the time. I need to go to the tent immediately because if it's dark completely, I don't know where is the tent. I needed to see still with the last light the tent, otherwise it was impossible to find it.
Yeah, and that wouldn't have worked very well, being out there without a tent on that kind of...
No, but I managed it, and afterwards I was just puking and I was just so done. The other guys came, and of course I was happy for them, but also a little bit sad for me. And the mood there in this tent was so special, not a good mood. It was very low energy, all destroyed. Like Simone had some frostbites in the toes, Ali on the nose. And I think they have been also a little bit sad for me because I was the only one not being at the top. But then I also didn't want to even make this situation worse with my fall. I didn't want to tell too much because I said it's already heavy enough here. Yeah. But of course, I had so much pain. I hurt, I twisted my ankle. I broke a ligament. I had some problems in my stomach area. And I had a lot of pain. But I said, if tomorrow I can't walk down with my own legs, I need to stay here forever because there is no helicopter. And the other guys, how they can bring me down. So for me, it was a very tough moment because I was hiding in my sleeping bag and crying there for myself. Yeah, because I said, now I need to be strong. I need to be really strong. But then, thanks God, everything went well.
Yeah, it's really in those moments, right? We're all making choices. You keep choosing to survive, right? You never give up. We have the power inside us. It's a question of, do we use it in all circumstances of life? Yours was rather extreme, but being a survivor versus a quitter, right, is always the saying, pain is temporary and quitting is forever, seems to apply to you very well.
Yeah, exactly. And interesting was also that in the moment where I had this fall, I knew exactly what I needed to do. So I had a very clear mind, even though I was very, very tired. Yeah. And I didn't got panic or panic attacks. Yeah. I was really clear and I knew, okay, you need to do this and don't use your crampons because maybe you will break your legs and then it's impossible to walk down if in case you will stop. And so it was working really, really good. Yeah. This was a very nice, how to say, new knowledge. I don't know what.
It's good. Yeah. New thinking is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, but that was the years of experience that came together, really, right? That you could make good judgments in a short period of time that would benefit you, having had that experience.
I don't really know because I never had such an experience before. And I think this is just about survival mode.
Yeah.
I never had this before. So it was very curious. And I was also happy for this experience because I said, okay, now I know also that in these situations, you are clear-minded what to do. And this was giving me a good feeling for the future, for all the new adventures.
Hey guys, Joe Gagnon, host of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. And this episode is brought to you by 1UP Health. 1UP Health is a modern cloud data and interoperability platform that makes it easy to acquire, store, and share data between payers, providers, and patients. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Right. So you have the accident, you survive, you could quit at that point in your career, right? And say, okay, I'm good, but you continue on in spite of all your knee pain as well, which is still continuing, right? So that hasn't gone away. Why keep going at that point? What was it that keeps you?
I think because it was much easier to keep on going and not to say I will stop, because it was always this definition through my performance. And of course, I had some months where I didn't feel so good, but at the end, I created this image and Tamara needs to go to the mountains. And this changed only after K2 in winter, because there the tragedy was so bad that I was no more able to look away from all this. And it was like so intense that it was like a break in the car, a full break. And I needed to ask myself very basic questions. I am really this person? Are the mountains really everything in my life? Or all these basic questions, also about valuing my life, or yeah.
How did you feel asking yourself those questions? What was that like?
It was the hardest period of my life.
Yeah.
So the first year I was just sad and I was crying a lot and I gained 10 kilos. I didn't want to go to the mountain anymore. I didn't want to do ski mountaineering anymore. I had panic attacks. I always thought I need to die doing sport because ski touring, avalanches, glacier, crevasses, biking, you could smash your head on the floor and you could fall from the sky. So in everything I did, I just saw the death. And this was so awful because I was never a person who had a lot of fear. So I just always wanted to explore, to try. We will see. But to live this was like something stole my life. It was the worst thing. And I said, I want to have back my life. I will fight for this now. And then I did trauma therapy. And also I did a lot of paragliding, because paragliding maybe was the thing, was the sport which made me the most afraid of all the sports. So I said, okay, you need to go in the most painful area with the trauma therapy.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was working. It was working.
When you're in this really difficult time, did you think you would get out of it? Or did you think, I don't know if I'll ever get out of this bad situation in my head?
I was not sure if I can eliminate this fear, but I wanted very hard. And I I said, I will give everything to just have back somehow my this inner child, yeah. This wandering child.
Yeah. Yeah, it was still there. There was something in the way, huh?
Yeah. It was in the trauma therapy, we realized that in the moment where all the bad things happened, I decided for myself that, okay, if you try to realize your dreams, you can pay with your life. And this was such a strong belief born in this moment that afterwards I always was so afraid. And we needed to change this belief system.
Yeah, right. And so interesting, because that wasn't showing itself before, but then it showed itself after, which means it probably was there all along, but it was below the layers of what you were doing, right? And it got uncovered because of the circumstance. And then this existential question to yourself, what I was trying to become, was that worth what I tried to become because of this struggle of where I only ended up? And now what do I want to become afterwards, right? And how to reconcile yeah. those. Is it the same or is it different?
And then all the pressure I made myself, the pressure of all the people, because the first question is always, and is still the same question now, what is your next expedition? What is the next 8,000 meter peak? And I'm so tired of this question. It's the worst, because with my ears and my feelings, I hear what you're doing right now is not enough.
Yeah.
And this is very bad, because you, of course, I created this person, or I am this person, I wanted to be this person, but now it's really hard to deal with my past, because for the people, I still need to do the same.
Yeah, I'm certainly not a psychologist. I've been through my own, talked to a lot of people about this kind of circumstance that I think often we're not in sort of love with ourselves. And so we're looking for the love from others. And the only thing they can connect to is not me as a person, but the activities.
Yeah.
We need to transition to where they actually are. I love myself. And then they love that person because I do. And then the activities are only a byproduct. They're not the essence yeah. of who Maybe. You became, right? Yeah. Do you feel like that's sort of this journey that you've been on to try and figure that out?
Yeah, I think so.
It's interesting at high performance levels, because we get captivated by what the human is capable of doing. There's people inside these high performing activities. And I think that it's sort of sad what's happened is when that goes away, their identity goes yeah. away, and then they're not valued in the same way. But yeah. the person is still there. And exactly. so the person has to survive on. And so I do think this is a sort of very fascinating struggle that we're not solving, but it's worth recognizing.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of athletes are dealing with this kind of problems afterwards. And also the emotions, because I was several times very close to death. And of course, in these moments, it was very difficult and tragic, dramatic and so on. But now afterwards, to think about these situations, it's there I felt so alive. And it's somehow I would like to have this back somehow, but I cannot imagine with what I can create again this intensity of feelings. And so this is also something where I say, oh my God, is my life over now? Or was this all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this isn't like about me, of course, but I know that feeling in my own different way.
And yeah, I can imagine.
We have to work on a more complete version of ourselves over time.
Yeah.
That doesn't either rely on the outside, relies on the inside. And what we do is there are some people who are sort of like, you're wound up pretty tight and you can go do a lot of big, hard things, but it's only one dimension. And then if you have more dimensions, then that piece seems to have less effect on us. But if it's all we have, then it is really hard to evolve.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer, but it is something we should all work on, which is becoming more complete. Because you're right, if you have another 50 years to go, what the heck are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting, because then I did a lot of meditation and breath work. And I need to say that in these moments, I also reach sometimes this complete satisfaction, this self-love, this fulfillment, which is so powerful, even more powerful than these emotions I had in the mountains. So there is something, there are some possibilities.
Yeah, I think that we use words that we don't exactly know what they mean. Transcendence as an example, self-actualization. And until you feel something, they don't mean anything. When you have to put yourself through a process that sort of is balancing all of what you are with the way the world works. And there is a good place we can end up, when it's possible that tomorrow becomes one of the great guides or coaches or supporters, right? Because of your experience. So we redefine ourselves over time, right?
Yeah. And I feel also that I call it personal sustainability. So I feel now much healthier, much happier than ever before, because I'm no more just one part of the medal. So I try to be a little bit more in balance, and I don't want to live only this male energy and always pushing, pushing, pushing. I want to become also a little bit this woman. Yeah, this was quite an interesting realization. But all this was just starting after the tragedy of K2 in winter. Yeah. So of course it was bad, it was sad, it was destroying me, but at the same time it was the thing which led to the Tamara 2.0.
I like that. So you and I won't resolve, but it's a good question. Can we get there to 2.0 without tragedy or big struggle? Can we evolve? What would we have to do to make that happen? It's an interesting question.
I mean, yeah, I think in my life, I had a lot of signs already. My body told me my whole life, and then I needed to stop several times for months and all these things. Then I was close to death several times, but nothing was able to stop me. And I needed maybe this intensity really to stop me.
Right.
But I think because I am a person who is stubborn, who is focused on the path and so on.
Yeah, the same thing that got you to the top of the mountain is the reason you struggled to redefine yourself.
Exactly. Maybe if somebody is a little bit less, maybe with not so big goals or so on, maybe this signs need to be less intense. I could imagine that it's like this.
Well, we define ourselves by that, right? Like that you liked what that was showing up as. I mean, it was a great feeling. And then you get to this point where, but it might not be constructive at some point, right? It might be destructive if we're not careful.
Yeah, exactly.
And the input from others, right? That's useless. Like they'll tell you, oh, you shouldn't do this or that. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, thanks. I appreciate your input, but I'm living my life.
And what I discovered was, or my biggest discovery was maybe the intuition. So before, when I was always in the male energy and just doing, and I saw intuition as like something for women, for the weak people.
Right.
And this is just keeping me away from the performance. That was my thought all my life. And only afterwards I realized, oh, but this intuition saved my life several times.
Right.
So if I want to be the person I really am, maybe the first step is to have the courage to listen to this intuition, to really ask yourself profoundly and in quiet, in peace. Okay, what is the thing I really want to do, I love to do, or what makes me feel happy or good? And then the next step maybe is to be honest with yourself, and then afterwards to your surrounding. And this was the thing which made myself having less pressure, because I was just honest to the person, to the people around me. I said, look, this is the situation I'm actually in. I'm also just a human. I would maybe like to be different, but this is the actual situation, and this is how I am right now. And I can just give you this.
Yeah. I think we're all willing to accept that of everyone. And I think we can think, love people for who they are, and both the good and the bad. And I also think that there are phases too. You can transition in your life to a new stage. where you redefine how you want to show up. And that's good too, right? I'm sure you're figuring that out now.
Yeah. It's a very long process I'm still in. And it's interesting because it's never boring.
No. I wouldn't probably ever use that word with you. I think that's probably not an adjective for Tamara. I think that there's always this default, like, what's next? I think more about what am I learning and how am I benefiting from that and how can others benefit from that, right? I think that's the key, because the what next will sort of resolve itself one way or another. But if we can get better, smarter, and more intuitive, more human about it, we'll probably end up with a better world at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know? Just need to show up that way. So and how are you, where do you feel like you're on this sort of journey of rediscovery? Is it a little bit of the way there, half the way there? I mean, of course, we'd never know the end of it, but where do you think you are?
Yeah, it's hard to know, but I think, I go to the mountains now. I feel no more the same as before the tragedy right now, but I found myself now in paragliding. I love it because since I decided I need to put myself into the fear to get rid of the fear, I was really falling in love with paragliding, and it fits my actual situation quite well because I do also races, but there is not only the physical part and performing, like body performing, but there is also this part, this feminine part, the intuition, decision making. So I think it's helping me also to find this balance in my life. And this is really beautiful. I love it.
Well, I think that's probably a beautiful way to end, because I think that the extreme athlete who gets to a place of balance and enjoying their life in a new stage is about the best thing we can have happen, because we're happy you're still here.
Yeah.
We'll keep track of what you're doing. And I wish you the best. But thanks for sharing. This is it's fun for me to meet incredible people like you and to see inside the journey a little bit, because what we read on Instagram is only a very, very shallow piece of what really is happening, right?
Yeah.
Thanks again, Tamara. I appreciate you.
Thank you. All the best, and maybe see you one day.
Yes, incredible. That would be fun.
Yeah.